So this is our fourth chapter, which is on simulation of traffic. And what I want to do with this topic is, of course, that we have one general theme, which is simulation of traffic. But firstly, there are, of course, different questions which could be asked. Of course, this is, for example, related to the fact that we take part in our daily traffic or weekend traffic or holiday traffic in different roles, and different topics need, of course, different modeling tools. So this is one point which is kind of obvious from the very beginning. If we want to model traffic on the highway, we have to use different tools than, for example, modeling the flow of pedestrians through a station, going from platform A to platform B to catch a train. But the second thing, which for me is also very important, is that this is one topic where I can show that taking completely different tools from different parts of mathematics is something which is useful. So there's one question, but you can take different tools and they will provide different types of answers. And, you know, doing this in two lectures already promises a bit too much with this, giving you this promise. But on the other hand, I think just going into this topic is maybe the most important thing, and being a bit more clear about that can only be done if you spend a bit of time thinking about that and taking it to heart. Okay, so the first topic in our chapter on traffic is so-called macroscopic models. I will just write this to the backboard because it's not clear that everybody really understood what I was saying. So macroscopic models. And I would say that, for example, the word microscopic is kind of clear because it refers to the tiny things which we can only see with the help of a microscope. So everything which is happening on a molecular or even atomic level, things like that, can't be seen with the eye itself, just with tools which help to see the very small things. And macroscopic is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. So where we are happy with observing things just very kind of naive, so the obvious things. And if you want to have an example for that, which is not from the traffic modeling universe, for example, if you think of the air which is moving here in this building, of course, everybody of you know from your education at school that the air is made out of molecules and a few ions which move around kind of freely, because as air, the power or the forces between these small tiny bits are not very large. So I could try to find out about the airflow in this room, this lecture hall, by trying to follow all the atoms, which would be a microscopic view. And you could say this would be the most precise point of view because I just follow all the atoms. On the other hand, you also know that there are quite a few atoms in each cubic centimeter, and the room has quite a few cubic centimeters. So at least for the moment, with the computers available, that's impossible to do, to really follow all the atoms. So what we usually do, and what we did before we even had the computers available, which we have nowadays, is to take the point of view that it's kind of okay to know at every point, or just for typical parts of the room, the velocity, which means the absolute value of the velocity and the direction. So velocity is always a vectorial quantity of the air which is moving. And maybe the temperature with that. It depends on what kind of questions you ask. And this is a macroscopic description of what's happening, because the quantities which we want to observe are just velocity and temperature, and not following the path of all the small tiny bits which form air. And concerning traffic, it's kind of clear that there is a parallel, because what we could try to do is to follow, for example, all the cars on a highway, and even kind of distinguishing different types of cars, because, of course, a small car behaves different from the huge lorries, which are also very much present on the highway, which would be a microscopic consideration. And on the other hand, we might say that it could be too hard to follow all these elements, which is only one aspect, because the other aspect is that, of course, for all these elements, we also would need some initial information, which is really hard to get by in this detail. And instead, we might try to find a first simplified models by just looking at quantities like the velocity. So maybe I just... the quantities under consideration, because this is our choice, yes, are velocity as a mean velocity. Then we are interested in the density. And from these two quantities, we are not really so much interested in the velocity and the density itself, but we are mostly interested in the flux of traffic. And of course, the flux, I will just give this the name F, because that's the first letter of the word, can always be calculated by taking this density rho and multiply it with the velocity. And so if we have the density and the velocity, then we can calculate the flux. Maybe I just take a color to show that flux is really the one quantity which is the most important for me, even if it's sometimes only the important one behind or in between the lines. Yes, of course, you could ask yourself if this can lead to useful information, which is kind of new compared to what we have as a gut feeling. So can we find out more information on what's happening in traffic by taking such rough quantities? And I want to convince you that it's possible, but only up to a certain point. So kind of the usual thing. Of course, you know, sometimes you could have that you find out that you can't find out anything with that, which makes you a bit sad, and I don't want to make you sad, so I at least start with something which gives a bit of information in addition. Of course, the inner picture with that is that we really consider traffic as a kind of flow, and this gives us a good reason to speak about a flux of traffic, to speak about density in the traffic, and to speak about a velocity, and to really not consider all the cars which make up the traffic individually, but just in their part in forming some general velocity, some flux, and some density. The questions which are useful questions to ask with that kind of rough model are what are the consequences of perturbations for dense traffic? And it's kind of obvious that this is a question which we ask ourselves often enough if we are traveling on the highway, that we see things are flowing in one moment, and in the next moment you already see the red lights of brakes of the cars in front of you, and you have to expect that you should at least slow down, but might have to stop because something is happening. And you really have to stop, and then you can go on forward, and you never come to a point on your travel which explains why you had to stop all of a sudden. So this is kind of things which happen only in dense traffic, because if the highway is free, more or less, you just choose the velocity you want to take and travel with that velocity, and that's nice, but not very interesting to study. So dense traffic is the situation in which we are interested. And of course, as an optimal result, our model would show us why we have these traffic jams which happen without any good reason. So they just happen without any outer source, just through the things which happen inside traffic. And so, of course, there is the assumption that it's probably a consequence of perturbations, because in front of our inner mind, we can perfectly imagine a situation where just all the cars travel with one fixed velocity, which even might be the highest velocity which is allowed, keeping a certain distance from one another, which is constant, and then everybody can just go with this very high velocity and nothing is really happening. But this is just an ideal picture which never happens in real life. In real life, we always have to deal with perturbations, which, as we all observe, finally lead to traffic jams, which are kind of not avoidable if we don't interact with the traffic which is happening. Okay. Of course, these are kind of physical quantities, at least on a meter level. And so the velocity... We want to consider this as, in general, so I won't do this all the time, but we could try to consider this as a function of time and of one space variable, because at the moment I'm really happy with having just a one-lane highway and not taking into account what's happening with overtaking, because overtaking is something which is too complicated to be in this density and velocity model, just as it is at the moment. And of course, our velocity is always a positive quantity. And it's safe to say that there is also an upper bound, which I will just call Vmax. And this upper bound can be an upper bound due to traffic limitations. And you could also consider this to be a physical upper bound, so which is kind of the highest velocity which you are ready to go with on a highway if there is no other car in the way. But I think it's more useful, at least concerning dense traffic, to think of this maximal velocity as the one which is kind of 130 kilometers per hour, which is something which is kind of the velocity which is assumed as being the typical one. And then the same is true for the density. So maybe I should say one word. So this is a Greek letter which is called rho. And, of course, you will write the rho in the way in which you can read your own rho, but that's the way I learned it at school, and I can't really write it any other way. And whenever I'm putting a rho on the blackboard, which is quite often, because I'm also teaching fluid flow, where the density is also a very important quantity, I have to remember one lecture in Heidelberg where I had a Greek person in the course. And he tried to kind of ignore my terrible writing of rho for some time, but then he had to explode and came to the blackboard and had to show me how rho is written really, so how it is taught in Greece. And I can't do it that nicely, but I always feel a bit sorry that I can't. So that's my rho. I hope it works as kind of as a symbol, at least for the density. Okay, so also rho is a positive quantity. We allow it to be zero, but it's just as a modeling thing. And it can only grow up to a maximum, which I also call rho maximum. And the idea behind that, of course, the maximal density is kind of a bumper-to-bumper situation. So the cars have to stop in order to realize that. And there is no distance between the cars, and then we have the maximum density. So in principle, thinking of the velocity and the density as being the variables which can change with the things which happen on the street in time and space, of course, is kind of a useful and considerate model. On the other hand, it's not really helpful to build formulas in doing this that way. So maybe I just give this a name. So if we want to look for a simple model, or the simplest model, and maybe it's really the simplest. It's not only very much simplified, but it's really simple. Then we are looking for the velocity as a function of the density. I should put this up. And of course, since the density is a function of time and one-directional space variable x, the velocity still is a function of time and x, but it's a function through the density rho, and we are more interested in the dependence on the density than on the dependence in time and space. And of course, the question is, to prescribe this function in a way that it's meaningful and helpful to explain what's happening under perturbations. And the simplest model just says we want to have that the relation between v, the velocity, and the density rho should obey two situations which we observe. So we have the following observations. Just two of them. The first observation is that when we have an empty street, all cars travel with the maximum velocity. And I just put this very short on the blackboard. So if we have an empty street, then all cars travel with the maximum velocity. And in a way, as a mathematician, you will start to innerly smile about that, because if we have a really empty street, no car is traveling, and the statement doesn't really make so much sense. But of course, I mean this more in the kind of everyday usage of empty, which means there are just a few cars traveling, and these few cars see their street as being almost empty because they don't interact with each other very much. And so they can travel with the maximum speed. Of course, you could also say, why should everybody wish to travel with the maximum speed? But I think, as a first assumption, it's not such a bad assumption. Especially if we take as maximum speed not just like rocket space of more than 200 kilometers per hour, but something more moderate, like 150 or 130 kilometers per hour, which is still very safe. And I think almost all cars would be able to travel with that velocity as well, except very long lorries, which are forbidden to travel with that velocity and do nevertheless very often. Okay, the second observation is kind on the opposite spectrum of the observation, that we have that the velocity is really zero whenever the density is maximal. So that's the observation that you have the traffic jam, and then cars really fill up the street bumper to bumper, and nobody can move, especially not out of the traffic jam. Only the first cars could move whenever the things which for which they stopped are taken away. And we could make this even more more precise, that we say that the zero velocity really only occurs when we have the maximum density. So we could make this only when the maximum density is there. So the difference between these two is not very big. So this is kind of more the observational language, which still is very everyday-like. And this is more precise in order to make this a formula. So these are the observations. Then we could make an assumption just in order to make it possible to write down a formula, which is a formula which has both observations inside and is as simple as possible. The assumption could be that our velocity decreases monotonically with growing density. So I'm sorry, I just kind of didn't really estimate that I need a bit more space, but I think it's still clear the order of the things on the blackboard. So in a way, I try to be very clear here what I'm really doing, because the first two, of course, are very much related to observations, but we make this a bit more precise than the observations, really. We can give credit to our observations, just a tiny bit, which is necessary. Then we put something on top of that, which is just a gut feeling. Yeah, our assumptions that we don't really have reasons to believe that the velocity would behave differently, because we have two situations between a maximum velocity and a minimum velocity, with the minimum density and the maximum density attached. So we just assume that between these two extreme points, the velocity just behaves monotonically in rho, in the density. And since we know that it has to decrease, I'm just writing down that the velocity decreases monotonically with growing or increasing density. We don't really have a law which says that it should be like that. This is just the simplest assumption which we can have. Okay. So then the simplest law, which obeys both observations and our assumption, is the following, that the velocity is the product of the maximum velocity and the quantity, which is 1 minus the density over the maximum density. So I'm just repeating that. We have 1 minus rho over rho max. So this is a decreasing quantity in rho. And we multiply that by the maximum velocity. And you see, when you insert here rho being equal to 0, then the result is maximum velocity. And when you insert the maximal density, then you have maximum density over maximum density, which gives a 1. 1 minus 1 is 0, and so the velocity is 0. Both our observations are realized with our formula. And the monotonical behavior is just because this is a linear relation in rho, and the linear function is always monotonic. It's even kind of monotonic, because it has the one steepness only and doesn't change. Okay, and so you could say, and this, maybe you just keep that in mind, that the simplest model for traffic modeling is just writing down this relation between the density and the velocity, because this is nothing else than a model. Of course, it's kind of derived from certain observations and from an assumption which seems okay, but it's nevertheless a very simple and simplified model, with the velocity being a linear function of the density. So from this velocity, of course, we can immediately calculate the flux, which is also a function of rho, as being rho multiplied with Vmax. And this is, again, multiplied with 1 minus rho over rho max. And what you see is that this is a quadratic function in Rho. And maybe it would be helpful to write this in a different way, but, you know, I just started with Rho because this was the formula I had on the blackboard before. And if I write this Rho behind my 1 minus Rho over Rho max bracket, it's even more clear that this is a quadratic function in Rho. And we can very easily draw the picture for that. So I'm putting a diagram to the blackboard where we have Rho as the variable and f of Rho as the value in which we are interested. And then we have 2 points where the flux is zero. This is for Rho being equal to zero. And then it's for Rho being the maximum density. And now we have two different possibilities to find the same result. One possibility would be to find the maximum value of the flux by calculating the first derivative with respect to Rho, then setting it equal to zero, and looking for which density this is fulfilled. On the other hand, you know how quadratic functions look like, and this is kind of clear what's happening. So this maximum will be precisely halfway between zero and the maximum density, so at Rho max over 2. And I'm just putting here F max as being the value for that, and we can immediately calculate that from our formula. I'm sure you have nicer parabolas in your notes. So it looks like that. So of course, it's a reasonable question, kind of a sub question to our main question, what's happening under perturbances with dense flow on the highway, to have the best possible flow, because this is kind of a situation where all the participants in the traffic benefit if the flux is as high as possible. So we could say that we have an optimal density of the traffic for Rho max over 2, at least if we relate that to the maximum flux. And you know, the second question, don't want to jump. The thing is that, of course, this is a very simple model. On the other hand, if you see this for the first time, I should give you a bit of time to follow my arguments in order that you see the beauty of the simple model. Of course, I was kind of using this formula V of Rho because I can calculate very simply with this formula finding this optimal density. On the other hand, we really don't have such a good handle on the density in the traffic. But what we can imagine is to infer a new maximal velocity to the traffic on the highway, for example. And of course, since we have this direct relation between the velocity and the density, we can try to go through the velocity to have as a result a good density. So what we could have as in order to stay near to the optimal flux, velocity limits are useful. And of course, this kind of is clear because we have this relation that V is a function of Rho, and Rho is in a way a function of V through this direct relation. It's kind of a funny idea to have a sign on the highway which says, please don't get denser than a certain number. Nobody could make sense of that. But saying that the maximum velocity should be 120 whenever the density of the traffic goes over a certain limit is something which you will have observed very often. So I think one of the earliest examples for that kind of useful interference with traffic was around Frankfurt. Because if you go along the A5, one thing, of course, is whenever you come from the north, a lot of the persons coming by car want to go to the airport and are really nervous to reach the airport in time. And so nowadays you even have like a number of minutes, which is to be expected for the traveling time to the airport. But this is just kind of a secondary thing which comes out of this kind of modeling. What's really happening there is whenever the traffic gets too dense, and even if it's a traffic which is on four lines for most of the parts, not just the one-line traffic, which I was kind of assuming in order to keep my model very simple, it starts with asking for 120 kilometers per hour, then it goes down to 180 and even 60 kilometers per hour may happen if the traffic is really dense. And you feel kind of cheated being on a highway and to be asked traveling so slow. But with this model, you can prove to yourself that it makes perfect sense to travel much slower than the maximal velocity or the traveling velocity with which you made your plans using the highway in order that everybody on the highway reaches the next point of the travel as soon as possible, because the flux is as high as possible with these many cars. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing is, of course, this is not really enough, but we have this special law here as the simplest law, and you can calculate for each density, you can calculate the corresponding velocity. And so you can also calculate for each velocity the corresponding density. And the only thing which is not so straightforward, but which is kind of also interesting, and we will come to that later on, that of course for the flux, you always have two densities which realize the same flux, only the maximum flux has only one density. So here we don't really have a one-to-one relation, but for the velocity we have, because it's a linear function in rho. And so we can invert that immediately. Maybe I should draw that picture, and this makes it more clear. Rho and the velocity. And so we have a maximum velocity and a maximum density. And here we have zero density. And then the relation which is there is just that it decays like this line. And then, of course, whenever you ask, maybe I just take a color, for a certain velocity, this is related to a certain density. And so, in a way, what you immediately see from this picture is that, of course, this optimal, at least as long as we use this law, is related to the half of the maximum velocity. Yeah, of course, yes. This is just the simplest one. And of course, maybe I just come to that in a moment. Yeah, maybe just to give... The thing is that, of course, with all the traffic, it's kind of hard to gather enough information to have more refined models. That's why it's okay to start with this very simple model, which says I'm observing this point and I'm observing this point, and nobody really forbids me that these two points are connected in that way. Yeah, and this already gives the result that I'm directly seeing that the flux is, of course, then a quadratic function and has this kind of behavior, and that we will have a maximum flux not near to my maximum velocity, which is kind of the image which I have in my head. But it's more kind of in between. With this very simple model, it's just half. You know, if it's half, it's really debatable. Or if it's, it could, depending on the situation, could be even be much more near to the zero here, yes. And for this, we could have more refined models, and I will write down two of them on the blackboard in a moment. Then there is one thing which is not so nice with this simplest model, that this model can't answer the question why we have this traffic jam with no reason. Yeah, because this is much too simple for that. But at least it gives us a first answer that whenever the density of the traffic gets high, we lose on the flux a lot. And so entering the traffic with demanding of certain highest velocities is a useful tool to increase the flux for the traffic, and it's helpful in order to keep the flow kind of stabilized, yeah, because they move slower but more stable, in the sense that we hopefully won't have a traffic jam with no reason, even if the model doesn't really speak about that very precisely. So I'm just, the first thing was okay, the second was more like hopeful guessing. So maybe I just put one thing for that on the blackboard. Or maybe, yeah, I shouldn't do so much on the blackboard because it takes so much time to write. And the question here, which maybe two questions. One question is rho max half really realistic? And I would say it's kind of a good try to think yourself if you would think that it's more near to the maximum density or more near to the zero density maybe. And it's not clear at all. So maybe it would be nice to have models which would explain that, and models which are derived from more data, because at the moment we are just using 2 points, which is really very poor. So, and the second question is how to explain the traffic jam with no reason. And of course, no reason means we don't observe something which we can see as a reason. There should be a reason because we believe in deterministic behavior, but no obvious reason. Because if you have an accident and you see that instead of 3 rows you can only use 1 row or no row at all, it's obvious that things slow down, and we're slowing down at the beginning of the queue. Of course, everything behind that is slowing down as well. But that's just one reason which you can observe. Very often, you just see no reason at all for traffic jams where you sometimes spend an hour or more. So it's really just the density of the traffic which is responsible for that. Of course, the usual way as a mathematician and also as an engineer is to say, if you want to know more about there are two possibilities. One possibility is I have data which tell me where is the optimal density, and I would like to have a model where I can put this as a third quantity into my model. Of course, having 2 points of information, I can work with a linear model. With 3 points of information, I would at least need a quadratic model between velocity and density, which leads to a cubic model for the flux. So this is one absolutely standard way to proceed. The second way would be to say, you know, I have no information, but better than linear probably is nonlinear, because I just have one or even two quantities more, depending on how high I go with the powers. So one answer, just saying maybe answer one. And of course, it's not really an answer in the sense that it answers the question, but it's just one try to answer the question. If we work with nonlinear models, and nonlinear. And maybe I put this just, this is related to the relation between the density and the velocity, because of course the relation between the flux and the density already has been nonlinear because it's quadratic. And nevertheless, the model in itself is kind of the relation between the velocity and the density, and so the model still is a linear one on the upper left corner. And now if we take maybe a quadratic relation or a cubic relation, then it's a nonlinear model. And maybe as a remark to that, this gives the opportunity, or this gives the chance to include measured or estimated rho max values. So, and of course, situations in general, it won't just exist one rho max, so we just take a typical rho max into our model. And I have two examples for nonlinear models, which are taken from the script. So the first one, maybe I'll just call this model A, is, and of course I'm telling you that the real model is the one between the velocity and the density, and then I can immediately calculate the flux from that. And so I'm choosing now to write the model for the flux, in order to have kind of a little bit changing picture. So I'm saying that the flux is now a cubic function in rho, and I have a part which is a quadratic function, which is of course multiplied by rho. And so you immediately see from this formula that of course this is my model, which I assume for the velocity. And due to our structure, we can see that our two observations are still included in the model, and we can choose alpha and beta. For example, we can choose it in a way that when we calculate the derivative with respect to rho, that we have, so maybe I just stick to my notes. One aspect is that we choose it such that the maximum flux is just the one which refers to the maximum density here. Of course, you could say that's kind of the definition of the maximum flux, but what I want to express with this formula is that now this is a measured quantity. Sorry, this was not really useful. Maybe I... Now, sometimes the simple model is just a little bit too simple in order to keep my head straight. So, of course, this point here is kind of an optimal, yeah, an optimal density. And since our model is so simple, this is so very much related to the maximal density as being half of that, that I started to mix that up in my head. So, of course, what we now have in addition from our observation is not the rho max, but of course is the optimal, yeah, which is not directly connected to rho max because our relation is more complicated. And so this is now a quantity which comes from measurements, and if I enter this maximum or this optimal density into my model, I would like to find the maximum flux. And of course, this can be done by just having a look at the derivative. So I will calculate the derivative. And This is easier when I'm immediately multiplying with rho here because then I don't need the product formula. So here I have a rho for which the derivative is 1. Here I have an alpha rho squared for which the derivative is 2 alpha rho. And here I have a beta rho cubed for which the derivative is 3 beta rho squared. And this should be optimal, which means maximum for the flux whenever this is 0. And of course, now I can put in here rho optimum, which I know, and rho optimum, which I know. And I will have to fix alpha or beta, one of the quantities, with a different relation. But one of the two can be fixed with asking for this relation in addition. So now I'm putting everything a bit more high. So what you see here is that I don't really want to make all the calculations on the blackboard because what I think is that it's more important to keep the idea. So the idea is that I have one more parameter and I can fix that parameter by imposing that the quantity rho optimum, which now is not a variable but a known quantity, is the one which realizes that the derivative of the flux vanishes at this point. So there's just one thing which is not really nice about this nonlinear function, that this is not monotonic, so not monotonic throughout going from these two points of observations as the linear function does, because as a quadratic function, depending on the choice of alpha and beta. But there are a lot of choices for alpha and beta where it's not monotonic, but it's decreasing for a certain part and increasing back. And this looks a bit odd, because this monotonic behavior, which I was referring to as an assumption which we do without observations, is nevertheless an assumption where we believe in that if we don't have other reasons for this, it looks a bit shabby. Yeah, if the model is such that it decreases and increases and we don't know why. That's why maybe I just put this on the blackboard as a remark. The monotonic behavior, or also monotonicity is a bit odd. It's very short. That's why we could, and this won't get better with taking higher order models, because this only gets worse. This is also, you know, this is like the problem which you always have if you do interpolation. If you have certain points and you want to draw a nice curve through these points, if you try to do this with polynomials, so which like, you know, going from linear to quadratic, then to cubic and so on, you need higher and higher order polynomials in order to take a lot of points into account. Yeah, for 2 points, you need a linear. For 3 points, you need quadratic and so on. And the bad behavior is that these polynomials start to oscillate very strongly. And oscillate, you know, is just a different word for odd monotonic behavior, kind of. And so it might not be the best idea to take polynomials with higher orders, and even this quadratic one is kind of already not so nice. You know, it's not completely stupid, but it looks a bit odd. So we are not narrowed to going nonlinear by taking polynomials. So we could instead take a different one. For example, now I'm going back to my velocity, v of rho. You know, I like this factor, v maximum. And now we don't really take this linear model, which we had. So 1 minus rho over rho max. But we take this rho over rho max with power alpha. And this is already kind of in a generalized sense, because I'm not really thinking about a 2, 3, 4 here, but it could also be a 0.5 or a different real number just. The only thing which I wouldn't really like to have is a negative number, so it should be positive. And then in order to have a second parameter, I'm putting this bracket 1 minus rho over rho max to the alpha to the beta. So for some alpha and beta being positive real numbers. And this also gives the opportunity to feed into our model a quantity optimal rho, which is observed from the traffic, in order to fix our alpha and beta. And then you can, of course, compare the outcome of that model with data. And in principle, the situation is, if you go through that, so we have a rho here between 0 and rho max, and the flux function, then we have, of course, points of observations which are distributed according to a curve which we could think of growing very steeply first, and then it goes down, and the distribution with respect to the flux change gets bigger and bigger if we come nearer to the maximum. So on this side, we have a lot of measuring points which differ very much from each other. But going with inside this situation of measurements with a curve, it looks more like, of course, we should meet the zero here. It was just looks more like that. And we can prescribe this curve with our model B. Sorry, there is an L still missing, model B. So the interesting thing is that these kind of data, which I just put on the blackboard as dots, they are really available for highways. And it's nice to see that such a simple model as our model B really is kind of near enough to what's observed, concerning that what's observed is not so stringent. So it's not so, you know, they don't really align each other very, very well to a curve. But if we have to draw a curve through that, such a simple model with two parameters is complicated enough to catch that behavior. Okay. Now, maybe I just repeat what we did up to now, because now I want to go one step further. So, of course, I did a first very much simplifying step in saying that we want to use macroscopic models, which only use density, velocity, and flux as the main quantities which we want to have in our model. And the question which we can answer with the help of this model is that whenever the density of the flow gets big, no matter what kind of the models which are on the blackboard we use, it makes sense to ask for reducing of the velocity in order to keep the flux as high as it's possible under the density of the flow. So in a way, these very simple models are really useful models, even if they are very much simplified. On the other hand, what's not so nice is that still we can't explain traffic jump out of nowhere. So maybe in looking for the velocity as being a function of the density is useful, but not enough for that question. So maybe I put this as a remark to the blackboard. For the explanation of traffic jams with no reason, the relation V, also so the velocity is a function of rho, might be too simple or too simplified. And we can make this more complex in maybe more complex models, because it's kind of funny, because I think one of the most difficult parts of doing modeling is really to come to simple enough models. So to make it more complicated is kind of doing things more simple. So it doesn't look like this is a complicated question to make it more complex. But of course, what I want to say is we want to have a more complex model, which we still build on a basis which we can handle and understand, and which we can treat afterwards. And so I'm building a more complex model on the basis of conservation laws. Maybe I make this more on conservation laws. If you compared it to our first part of the lecture, I was like referring to, I'm looking for a law which says how the velocity depends on the density, and I can base this on my two observation points and the gut feeling that between these two points it should be monotonically. Now I'm saying this was too simple for our next question concerning traffic jams, and now I'm basing it on the observation that, for example, when I have a highway which is a ring, so I don't really have some cars entering into it, the cars will stay on the highway, so no cars will go away, just, you know, by vanishing into thin air, and no new cars will be born. So the number of cars is a number which is conserved. So just putting it like that looks even a bit too complicated. What I'm saying is the number of cars stays constant without inflow and outflow. So that's the idea with which I want to try to formulate an equation. So the number of cars gets a name, n of t. Of course, it doesn't really make sense to say that it depends on x, because it's a constant. It could depend on time whenever we have inflow and outflow, so I'm sticking with a function which depends on t. So the number of the cars I can write mathematically as an integral over my inflow point A and outflow point B over the density. And I can allow the density to differ in time, and it is different along the interval from A to B, and I'm taking the integral with respect to x. So that's kind of a standard procedure. So you could think of the numbers of cars as being like a mass. If I'm now calculating the change in time, so calculating with respect to time, of course, since the A and B are not depending on the time, the derivative just goes inside. So I have the change over time for the density and have to integrate over that. But since the density is as it is, this is nothing else than the inflow at A, which I can write as the function, flux function in t at the point A in, as an x variable, and I have to take away what's flowing out at point B. This relation here is nothing else than the formulation that the number of cars stays constant, yes? So maybe I just use colors. So this property that the number of cars stays constant without inflow and outflow is now just written as any change in the number of cars has to be caused by an inflow and an outflow. So that's just this property here. So, but of course, due to the laws of calculus, we can write this as being kind of the result of an integration with respect to x. So we can write this as minus the integral from a to b of the change in the flux function with respect to x. So, and now still we have these integrals here which come from the fact that we were really starting to work with the definition of the number of cars. But of course we think of all the functions as smooth functions, which means they fulfill these integrals whenever they fulfill these equations pointwise. So if I write this pointwise, this means that any change in the density with respect to time, so the partial derivative with respect to time of the density function is always balanced by the change in the flux function with respect to x. So this is what's on the blackboard at the moment. But of course, this looks much nicer if I just write that these two together add up to zero. And this is, of course, a general relation which is always true as long as we believe that cars don't, we don't have a source or a leak of cars, which I kind of, I think is kind of, yeah, solid ground. And we call this even equation of traffic. So whenever I'm asking you for the equation of traffic, I want you to come up with this relation here. And I find this equation of traffic really beautiful because it's a result of a very simple idea and a very simple calculation. Yes, because the idea is just that the number of cars is constant, except inflow and outflow. I can write the number of cars with the help of the density, and changes in the density in time can only come through the inflow and outflow, and I can write this difference of the inflow and outflow as a change in x of the flux function. So, and that's why this is a nice equation which always has to hold true. Then there are two things which are not so nice about this equation. Maybe you immediately see one of the things which is not really, so why we can't really work with the equation as it is on the blackboard at the moment. Maybe I just give you a moment of silence to think about that. Yeah. That's true, and that's really, really bad. So what we need in addition, thank you. So we need something of the form that f is a function of rho. Or, you know, that's just the simplest solution to that problem. So if we can replace the flux function by a function of rho, then we have a partial differential equation, which is just a change of rho in time and change of rho in space of a function of rho in space has to be equal to zero, which is the partial differential equation, which, you know, is not that simple to solve, but is something where we have standard procedures how to do that. But if we don't have a relation between the flux and the density, we are completely lost. So we can only do something if we have, we can replace the flux with a function which is a function of the density. That's obvious, kind of. Okay, and you know, the good thing about that is that, of course, in order to at least start to see if things work nicely, what we can do is we can use the models for the flux which we derived in our first section. So we could, for example, implement our simplest model where the flux is just the quadratic relation of the density. and see what kind of properties the density or what kind of solutions our partial differential equation has for that. And if this is not nice or not satisfying, we can go over to our more complicated model, which is the model B here, where we know that it gives quite an accurate description of what's happening. So maybe I just put this on the blackboard in order not to speak over your heads. So we can use our simple models for that. So one representative would be to use f of rho as equal v max multiplied with 1 minus rho max over rho, rho over rho max, of course, multiplied by rho. Or the other one would be the second one, which made really good sense if compared to the data, which was we take rho over rho max to the alpha, take this away from 1, take this to the beta, multiply this with rho and v max. So these would be two relations which we can put into our equation, which both would make sense. So after that, we have a partial differential equation in rho. And of course, since it's a partial differential equation, we won't be able to solve it with our hands or with just calculating integrals or things like that. We will probably use numerics to do that. So we use numerical schemes to solve the partial differential equation. PDE is the abbreviation for that, for rho. Because rho now is the unknown quantity in our equation. And if we do this in the kind of naive or simple way, we are in for a surprise. Because what's happening is that, for example, replacing both derivatives, which are first order derivatives, by kind of the differential approximation, you know, which would be a first idea where you have the feeling that this is absolutely okay to do, then this behaves not stable at all. So you can't really calculate with that, because before your numerical scheme starts to converge, it already explodes to high numbers which make no sense at all, or it oscillates. So what you see is this PDE does not behave stable under standard procedures. Maybe I just put scheme as numerical scheme here, so under standard schemes. There are two possibilities to work with that, since we kind of believe that our partial differential equation is kind of a good equation because it's on solid ground of the conservation law, and you know the model which we introduced between the flux and the density, they are simple enough that we don't really believe in putting some problems into our model by doing that. So one possibility is to have a look at this partial differential equation as a mathematician, asking yourself what kind of equation is that. So what we are doing is with these kinds of equations, we speak about elliptic equations, parabolic equations, and hyperbolic equations. And of course, there are strict definitions how you do that. And they are related to second order equations, which at the moment it's not really clear why I should consider this to be a second-order equation, because we have both a first-order in our kind of meta formal, which is always true. Nevertheless, these three notions still make sense in speaking about partial differential equations in general, because one, so kind of the main characteristic of elliptic equations is that whenever you have a perturbation in an elliptic equation, the equation diminishes perturbations. And the things which you observe in real life, which behave like that, are all diffusion processes. So if you start with kind of a jump initial condition, so you put something on a petri dish, some drop, and then you just wait it to vaporize and distribute, then this kind of perturbation at the initial condition is smoothened out over time by the elliptic process, which is, or the elliptic equation, which describes such a diffusion process. Or distribution of heat is also something where you, the process itself is smoothening all out all perturbations. And our usual numerical schemes, they only work well with such elliptic problems because, of course, we are doing, we're introducing errors into our model by using numerics. You know, numerics are just working with approximations, so that there's always an error. Then we also have errors in using the standard calculation possibilities of the computer. So we are all the time introducing perturbations in our system. And it's nice because elliptic problems smoothen out all these errors, and numerics and elliptic problems work really well together. So for parabolic systems, we very often observe that to be an elliptic process over time. So in each time step, there is a smoothening out in space. And so we can kind of combine intelligent time stepping with a good process over space, yeah, which is always smoothening out perturbations. So also this is kind of, you know, you just have to use probably implicit time stepping in order to stay on a stable side with respect to time. But if we come to hyperbolic problems, we are in for all kinds of surprises. Because hyperbolic problems are problems which, depending on the situation, they take a perturbation and blow it up. You can even prove that they, you know, just taking the equation, they can blow it up to infinity, which, you know, won't happen in real life. But so hyperbolic equations together with numerics, they are not a match made in heaven. Or you could have to sit down and really think about what you do with your numerical schemes. Because one possibility is, for example, that you see that with the simple hyperbolic equation as we have on the blackboard, there is a certain transport in the equation, and you should really keep in your numerical scheme the transport which really happens in real life. So the 2 points which you take as an approximation for your derivatives, they should be aligned in the transport direction in order not to have an information which is completely not physical in your model. So you can stabilize that with these kinds of numerical schemes and can solve it. It's possible, but it's really hard numerical work to prove that and come up with good schemes. So now, of course, what we could say is we ended up with a terrible model, and you could even say it was maybe a wrong model because it's too complicated. But why? This is a question to you now and the final question of the lecture for today. Why are we sure that this is a good model and a correct model? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so I just boiling this down to one sentence would mean that we are on such a solid ground with our assumption that the number of cars is okay, that it must be a good model. Okay. I wanted to emphasize something which is really something which surprised me very much when I first noticed that. And I think I would really like you to take this away from the lecture, as you know, some things already before. The thing is, if we don't take such a model as our hyperbolic model, which allows for perturbations to grow, how would we model traffic jam with no reason? Yeah? If we would like to have that as one possible solution to our system, we must have a system which allows that. And the only possibility for that is to work with hyperbolic equations. So that we end up with a hyperbolic equation is a really good news, because that's the only model which can really explain the traffic jam. Because, for example, what the system allows, and that's just the last picture. So, for example, if we have a distribution over time, over space, I wanted to be fast and was too fast. So, like, the density is like a sinus function, which is very, very smooth. You wouldn't expect something terrible to happen from that. If you feed that into our hyperbolic system, you can change that over time to growing fronts here, which ends up being a traffic jam here. Yeah? Because this really means that you don't really have a smooth change in your density, but something which is already almost a jump as I'm drawing it here, and which can really end up being a jump, which means an end of a traffic jam or start of a traffic jam as a solution to our hyperbolic equation. So hyperbolic equations can be really useful, even if they are terrible for numerics. Thank you for your attention, and seeing you next week.